Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. It is the Weekly World View, and I'm here alongside my extremely attractive audio engineer, once again on the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought and the big stories this week. So many big stories. I'll tell you, at church this morning, Pastor Bob gave a sermon on just how dark it is out there in the culture. It made me feel safe and warm and comfortable to be inside the walls of Denver Bible Church, and not out there with the unwashed masses. And so I'm ensconced here in the bowels of the McBurney compound, feeling safe once again, isolating myself from the outside world, threatening the socialization of both myself, my extremely attractive audio engineer, and my children. And I'm glad to have you along because I know that I can trust you, and I'm so glad that you're listening in. I want to start. Should we talk about the FCC commissars? That was a big story this week. Very fishy story that one of Barry's own people on the Federal Communications Commission would come out and state in the Wall Street Journal that the commissars in town, and Barry's sending them into the newsrooms. And then, followed by the right-wing media, so-called right-wing is in quotation marks there. Nobody's to the right of me, so it's hard for me to view anyone as right-wing. But the so-called conservative media came out, and they were all up in arms that Barry was going to have his commissars in the newsrooms. And then the FCC magically backs off before the end of the week, and I don't know. Just very fishy story. I wouldn't be surprised if the commissar is already there. I heard a story on the radio this week in Denver. The fella goes to the doctor and his wife goes in. She's being checked out by the doctor, and there's two other doctors there. One is her doctor actually performing the checkup. Another doctor is the Obamacare doctor. And then the third doctor is a Kaiser Permanente doctor there to supervise the Obamacare doctor while the Obamacare doctor supervises the actual doctor. And, I mean, if that's going on in medicine, it's just a matter of time before it goes on in the newsrooms around America. And the story seems fishy. Right, well, and then there's Ukraine, another fishy story. Those Occupy types there in Ukraine have, for the moment, taken Kiev. And we'll see how that all ends. Very ugly over there. Very ugly. The protesters really wanted to provoke violence. And I suppose, I don't know much about the government there in Kiev. I don't keep up on it. But I gotta assume Vlad is not very happy. And so we'll see how all that shakes out. Just reminded me of Occupy Wall Street, except these protesters in the whatever square it was there in Kiev, they weren't lazy, pot-addled protesters. They were serious with the Molotov cocktails, the firearms and all that. It's almost as if Occupy Wall Street was rehearsed here and then exported around the world. And now it's in, well, throughout the Middle East and Venezuela, Kiev, and I think, what, Turkey now? Anyway, it's odd to see all these city squares erupting into flames and violence all over the world. But let's start out right here in the good old U.S. of A. A story I got from CNN. Now, originally, I had filed this in the bad religion file, but then I had a second thought, and I filed it in the sad religion file. Not bad religion, just sad religion. Have you heard of Jamie Coots? He's a preacher. He has a reality show called Snake Salvation. CNN says he's an ardent Pentecostal believer and said that he believed in the passage in the Bible that suggests a poisonous snake bite will not harm believers as long as they are anointed by God. Now, I'm not sure that's exactly what it says. But hey, this is CNN. They probably have a limited understanding of the Bible. Probably don't even have access to an actual Bible. And I'm sure that the intranet there at CNN, the Bible is blocked. Yeah. So they it's not like they can actually reference the actual Bible. But it does say something like that about snakes. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, it's mentioned in the Gospels about the snakes. And then it's mentioned again when the Apostle Paul is actually bitten by a snake. He shakes it off into the fire, and the people are amazed that he's unharmed. But Jamie Coots, he had himself a reality show. He was a third-generation snake handler. Yeah. He says that, what does this mean? He was a third-generation. Oh, I see. Jamie died this past Saturday of a snake bite. And he was he refused to be treated to somehow show that he was anointed by God, I presume. And either the snake was particularly venomous, or he had lost his anointing. I'm going to go with the former on that. Yeah, it's the sad religion file. And, of course, the liberal media was all over the story, reported far and wide. And, normal Christians were embarrassed. And it is sad for his family and for his congregation. And rather ironic as well, though. So there you have it, the sad religion file for the week. We'll set that aside. And we'll move up, we'll move into the alternate universe file, because I saw this headline on NBC, and it said, here's what the headline says: David Wise's alternative lifestyle leads to Olympic gold. So a fellow like me sees a headline like that, and I assume that this guy's probably some kind of deviant that's won a gold medal, and now the news media wants to elevate him. But then when I actually read the story, I find out it's not that at all. In fact, let me just give you a little sampler from the story. David Wise is a freestyle skiing half-pipe gold medalist, and he is at the top of his sport, according to CNN. However, he's not like the rest of the field. At only 23, he has a wife, and they have a child. They have a 2-year-old daughter. And NBC says, at such a young age, Wise has the lifestyle of an adult. He also attends church regularly and says he could see himself becoming a pastor. So the headline basically says that being a normal person, being grown up at 23 and having a wife and child, that's now considered an alternative lifestyle, at least by the reporters at NBC covering the Olympics, which we missed. We didn't catch much Olympics around here, did we, my dear? No. We didn't watch the freestyle skiing halfpipe. But we certainly congratulate David Wise. We're glad he won a gold medal. And we're even more glad that he's just a normal person. But we're a little dismayed that the mainstream media says that a fellow with a wife and a daughter is practicing an alternative lifestyle. Although I suppose if you were to poll the skiers and the skaters and all the Olympians, you'd probably find out that, you'd find out that most of them are normal like him. But the news media likes to celebrate the deviants. And now when they see normalcy, that strikes them as deviant. Hence the alternative lifestyle headline that caught my eye. All right. Now, speaking of alternative lifestyles, interesting story from the Washington Times about hate crimes. The reporter for the Times writes, did you hear about the two gay dads whose daughter got a nasty rejection note for her tie-dye birthday party? Or the homophobic slurs written around an Ivy League college dorm? Or the two lesbians who came outside one day to find homophobic words painted on their garage door? Well, thanks to the internet, the whole nation can be driven to outrage over rude and outrageous events that, it turns out, never really happened, or were perpetrated by the so-called victims themselves. And then they go through a list of these phony homophobic stories. And they say even the 1998 death of Matthew Shepard, as it has been told by a homosexual author, as a matter of fact, says that it was a drug deal and not homophobia that was at the core of the torture and killing of the 21-year-old Wyoming man. Nevertheless, the folks over at GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against What is it? Against defamation, GLAAD. Well, they have, they're not buying into this. While they admit that all these stories were fabricated, they're holding on to Matthew Shepard. Here's what they have to say. GLAAD, the gay rights activist group that chronicles defamations against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people, stoutly defends the Matthew Shepard story as an anti-gay hate crime that changed America's views of LGBT people and led to a federal law against hate crimes. And they also noted, quote, that people also make up stories against LGBT people. Now for instance, that transgender students have been caught peeking over bathroom stalls or harassing other students. I don't know. I haven't read any of those stories. And they weren't able to name off a whole ream of stories like the reporters for the Times were regarding the fundamental dishonesty of the homosexual rights movement and the fact that the Matthew Shepard story in particular, that was nearly completely fabricated except the fact that Matthew Shepard was indeed murdered. The rest of it was all a lie. But I have to say I agree with GLAAD that the Matthew Shepard story did indeed change America's views of LGBT people. That was certainly a watershed event. And the homos are primarily leftists. And to the leftists, the ends justify the means in certain situations. And so there you have that. All right. Now, more alternative lifestyle stuff. I'm going to ask my extremely attractive audio engineer to try to busy herself doing something else so that she doesn't have to listen to all this because it's fairly disgusting. First story from CBS in Texas. Dateline, North Texas. Judge Carl Ginsburg presided over two ceremonies, and its participants are believed to be the first legal gay marriage in Texas.
Yeah.
The two couples said their I do's, and all four people consider themselves female. But one member of each couple has had their gender changed surgically from male to female. So a normal fellow like me is automatically confused. If you go through the trouble of having yourself surgically altered from a male to a female, what's the deal now with you marrying a girl? I'm not sure I get that. They were surgically altered from male to female, and then they married a girl. It's very confusing. Well, CBS reports that if you were born male and became female through the surgery, gender reassignment surgery, well, the state of Texas still considers you to be biologically male. And so the girls who used to be boys were considered boys by the state, so it's as if it was a boy marrying a girl, even though in the minds of the mentally ill people taking part in this wedding ceremony, they think they're girls, but yet they marry girls. Anyway, these couples down in Texas, CBS says they struggled to find clerks and judges who would cooperate. They tried as many as 17 different courts there in the greater North Texas area before they found someone who either supports their efforts, you know, the advancement of homosexuality, or they found a bureaucrat who just wasn't paying attention and just, you know, rubber stamp, whatever, you're getting married, fine. Look like boy, look like girl, whatever. Anyway, that's encouraging, slightly, that they had to go to 17 different courts before they could either dupe a hapless bureaucrat or find someone who was in league with their goal of normalizing deviant, perverted, destructive behavior. They say that one of the clerks said to them, "You want to get married, but you two are women." To which the homosexual said, "Well, here are our documents. Can you give us a license?" And the bureaucrat didn't know what to say, and a lot of the clerks just closed the blinds on their little windows and just waited for the weirdos to leave. But they shopped it around enough, and they managed to get married. They say, "We sat our child between us when we applied for our marriage license. and said, "We're normal. We're a normal couple, just like anybody else," they said in their surgically altered, mentally ill state. Now, these couples, according to CBS, are clear that they want to send a message. They say, "I hope that we can be an inspiration for someone like myself who thought a few years ago this wouldn't be possible. And that's all I want is to be equal," said one of the freaks who married her transgendered partner. "So all they want is to be equal." Yeah, all right. Well, it's sickening. Now, you know what, my dear? I understand why this gets you down sometimes. Just going through that story, I'm very confused at the end of that. Meanwhile, in Uganda, the legislature there in Uganda has passed a law criminalizing homosexuality. And South Africa's retired Archbishop Desmond Tutu has made an impassioned plea to Uganda's president not to sign it into law. He calls it an anti-homosexuality bill. I would call it a return to normalcy bill or a religious liberty bill. But Desmond Tutu, who is the Archbishop of what church? Was he actually associated with a Christian church at one point? Or is he like Al Sharpton? Just reverend is just archbishop, whatever. Just helps with the marketing. I don't know. Anyway, the president there in Uganda, he's fairly confused, and he's nervous about what to do, as you can well imagine. Anyone who stands up against the homosexual brown shirts can expect to have their career ruined and quite possibly to be harassed, driven from town, to possibly beaten, maybe even killed. So he's kind of backing and filling. He said he would sign it, and then he says, well, wait a second. He says now he'll consult scientists on whether homosexuality is determined by genetics or by a person's choice. Well, Desmond Tutu abruptly called on him instead to concentrate on legislation against rape and sex with children. He said that would provide more protection for children and families than criminalizing what the Archbishop characterizes as acts of love between consenting adults. Well, the Ugandan president says he's open to debate about homosexuality, right there proving he's not qualified to be the president of even Uganda. And he has encouraged the U.S. government to help him by working with Ugandan scientists to study whether indeed there are people who are born homosexual. And he says that if that's proven, he'll review the legislation. He's just looking for any way out. The gay mafia is standing at his door, just waiting for him to sign it. And so he'll do anything. And what do you think will happen if scientists from the Centers for Disease Control head down there to Uganda and start presenting studies to the Ugandan scientists? You think they'll help bolster the idea that homosexual behavior is just a deviant, mentally ill choice? Or do you think Barry's boys would go down there and convince everybody that we were all born this way? Exactly what I said. Whoa. All right. Oh, no. I have more. I'm sorry. You'll have to cover your ears, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. Yeah. This is from the, what is this, the MOB file? I'm not sure what I even meant by that. MOB, the mob file? It must stand for something. Maybe it will be clarified as I read through the story here. The governor of Arizona is confused. She's not sure what to do because a bill has been passed in Arizona that would let businesses refuse service to sexual deviants if such service conflicts with their religious beliefs. And Governor Jan Brewer says she hasn't decided whether or not she'll sign or veto the bill. She says, I don't have to make a decision until next Friday, so I have plenty of time. So she's not sure where she stands on a bill reinforcing religious liberty because the gay mafia is outside of her door as well. And they're watching her very closely. And there's a better than even chance that since she doesn't know what to do, she's not sure where she stands on the issue of religious liberty and the freedom for people not to promote a lifestyle that is at odds with their deeply held religious beliefs. Well, she's just not sure what to do because the gay mafia is standing there with their nightsticks slapping them into their hands, saying, what you gonna do, Jan? Anyway, you'll remember that Arizona signed a bill, enacted a law, a couple years ago, cracking down on illegal immigration. And Jan Brewer knew exactly where she stood on that. She knew exactly where she stood on people coming across the border without papers. She knew where she stood on that. But when it comes to social and sexual behavior that will destroy a civilization and has destroyed many before ours, she's just not sure where she stands. Well, there's other pressures on her, too, besides the fact that she has no moral foundation. That's the biggest problem. But there's also economic pressure. The chief executive of the Greater Phoenix Economic Council says he's concerned about an economic backlash, especially since Phoenix is scheduled to host the Super Bowl next year. You don't want to do anything against the homosexual brown shirts when we're about to host the Super Bowl. He says we've had four companies call us to tell us that we will be dropped from their list as a potential investment location unless Governor Brewer vetoes the bill. Yeah, I know these kind of tactics. Oh, it's a MOB file. It's the Mark of the Beast file. That's it. Yeah, well, you know, it says in Revelation that they could neither buy nor sell unless they took the mark. And in my mind, endorsing socially destructive, deviant, sexual, ungodly behavior is one of the elements of taking the mark of the beast. And it won't be long unless something changes dramatically until you and I will not be allowed to buy or sell unless we bow to the homosexual brown shirts and give them their way. Well, there you have it, from the Mark of the Beast file. Yes, all right. Another one, I really apologize. A reason number 798 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Now, I'm not sure where this is from. Wilson High School, anywhere USA, I suppose. They have a policy that allows school administrators to censor any message they deem as offensive. Well, there's a pro-life group in the school, and they wanted to put up some posters containing messages in favor of the pro-life cause. They wanted to put up two posters. The first one reads, quote, since Roe versus Wade, one-third of our generation has been aborted, unquote. It features the picture of a milk carton and the word missing above a photo of a baby. The second poster quotes President Ronald Reagan when he said, quote, I've noticed that everyone who is in favor of abortion is already born, unquote. Remember Ronald Reagan said. So these aren't pro-lifers who want to hang up pictures, bloody murder pictures, I call them, about the truth of abortion. They just want to hang up these pictures that would make people question in their mind this idea of the legalized killing of innocent children. And these be pretty good posters, I would think, to make young people think about something besides video games, whatever it is they think about. But, well, the school said no. School officials said the pro-life posters might offend. And so the pro-life group was not allowed to hang their posters. The same officials have allowed flyers and posters promoting homosexual relationships to students, by showing conjoined male symbols and conjoined female symbols and stating on their big posters, love has no limits. That's the pro-homo posters. Yeah. Now, these posters have been hanging in the high school, and they were hung by the Gay Straight Alliance. And, they have their symbols. Okay. So the hapless pro-lifers have engaged the Thomas More Society to challenge the school administration to be fair. And I've got news for you, pro-lifers, in the government schools. Don't waste your time. They're not going to be fair. And what you should do is get out of the government schools. Come out. Come out of it. Because you're simply not going to get a fair shake. And anyway, who wants to be fair about this? I don't want the pro-life message to be given equal time with the message that homosexuality is good. If that's the case, I would get out of that institution altogether. I would figure it's gone to hell in a handbasket, and there's really no way you're going to affect a significant change in that institution, and that you should probably focus within your own group of friends and family members and associates, because that institution is too far gone. If they want to give equal time to a lifestyle and behavior that destroys societies, and the idea that we should not murder innocent people. It's just bizarre, isn't it? The lawyers at the Thomas More Society, who, like so many other organizations, were founded to defend traditional family values, have proceeded to generate publicity and raise funds off this issue, I'm certain, but they have not offered advice to these students to get out of that institution. It will destroy you. So I respect the Thomas More Society. I think they do a lot of good things, but they should be telling these students, they should be giving them good advice. Get out of the government schools. Yes, but they have not done so. All right. Now we'll move on into the personhood file. This is from CNS News. In 2012, there were more black babies murdered in their mother's wombs in New York City than were born. Yeah, there were over 31,000 abortions, and there were just under 25,000 live births for black women in New York City. The black children killed comprise over 40% of the total number of abortions. Black babies, this is according to CNS News, black babies comprise 42.4% of total abortions. And then you've got the Hispanic abortion rate, 31%. So combined, over 73% of the abortions in New York City were committed against minority children. Fact that if Margaret Sanger were not currently roasting in the darkest, deepest pit of hell, well, she would be smiling. But she's not, because she's in hell. She's being tortured. But that was exactly her plan when she laid out the idea for the legalized murder of innocent people. The people she wanted to murder were the ones she considered subhuman. And that would be pretty much anyone who wasn't white. And her plans have gone along, amazingly well from her perspective, and horrifyingly effective. A horrifyingly effective execution of a brutal, murderous, ungodly, demonic plan to exterminate what were considered the lower races back when everyone was still real high on Charles Darwin and all his theories. Wow. The total number of live births in New York City for 2012, a little over 123,000. That's a rate of 14.8 per 1,000 women. It's a very low rate, the lowest since 1979. But the article ends by saying the rate of abortions per 1,000 women is actually down almost 9% since 2011. I guess we're supposed to look at that with some hope, but that's just chemical abortifacients starting to skew the surgical abortion numbers. Abortion is through the roof because now you don't even have to go to the surgical clinic to have it done. You can just go get a pill and poison your child and spontaneously abort the child yourself. It's just sad. This is why your view on personhood matters. Only personhood will stop this. You cannot regulate the killing of innocent people. Can't be regulated. It has to be outlawed. And only the reestablishment of the legal personhood of the unborn child will be an effective tool at changing enough hearts and minds and laws. The law first, probably. And then we can change hearts and minds. End of the world's becoming kind of a theme around here. I mean, when you read stories like that, you start to think, surely all is lost. In the city that most represents America to the world, more black babies murdered than born. Surely all is lost. Well, not all, but an awful lot. And that brings us to a story about Planned Parenthood from Breitbart. In an interview with the Criterion newspaper, Marianne Anderson revealed the horror and greed that pervaded the institution where she served for 2 years as a nurse. Yeah, she was a nurse at Indiana's largest abortion facility. And the stories she chronicles are, to outsiders, they would be shocking, or they should be shocking. And I appreciate Breitbart posting this story. But to someone like me who's followed and been involved in this issue for a number of years, these stories are repeats of so many stories I've heard from other people who worked within Planned Parenthood. She says one girl came in with her mom. She was about 16 and her mom had made the appointment. The 16-year-old thought she was there for a prenatal checkup, but the mom was pushing her into abortion. She blindsided her own daughter. Another time, she says, this guy brought in a Korean girl. Now, I had no doubt in my mind that this girl was a sex slave. This guy would not leave her side, and they could barely communicate. He wanted to make all the arrangements. During the ultrasound, she told one of the nurses there were lots of girls in the house and that the man hits them. One of the co-workers, well, she obviously brought this up to one of her co-workers. And one of her co-workers said, you're better off to just let it go. She says that the abortionist there, Michael King, would shame girls who were crying, revealing, these girls would start crying on the table, and Dr. King would say, now you chose to be here. Sit still. I don't have time for this, he would say. She says one doctor, when he was in the POC room, that's what they call the room where they actually kill the baby. See, they call the baby a product of conception. So the actual murder takes place in the product of conception room. It's a euphemism they use to try to insulate themselves from the horror of what they're doing every day. She says the doctor was in the POC room. He would talk to the aborted baby while looking for all the parts. He would say, come on, little arm, I know you're there. Stop hiding from me. And she said it made her sick to her stomach. And she said the sound of the suction machine still haunts me. So no matter how many euphemisms they install, the reality does get through to some people. Now, I'm sure that there are a lot of people working in the abortion industry who have completely insulated their conscience from reality, and that they're able to practice this day after day, and they just become harder and coarser people, but they're never touched by the humanity or the horror, the brutality of what they're doing. Anderson told the Criterion that the reason she worked for the abortion clinic was that she was worried about women having unsafe abortions, recalling, quote, "I must admit, I was kind of on the fence about abortion. I think a lot of it came from working at the hospital and seeing girls that had attempted abortion themselves and ended up with hysterectomies, or boyfriends beating girls because they were pregnant to cause an abortion. My thought was, well, if you need a safe place, people shouldn't be doing it on their own, and people are going to do it anyway, so why not provide them a safe place to do it?" So that's how she got into the business. But her position now has radically changed. She said, "I started feeling uneasy working there when people came from National and New York City to teach us the conscious sedation process." She says, "It was disgusting. These two ladies had a chant they would do. Abortion all the time. Abortion all the time. Abortion all the time." And they would lead the other nurses in this chant. And she thought, "I've got to get out of here." And she did get out. She said if she had to call an emergency dispatcher after a botched abortion, she said, quote, "We were told never to say the word abortion because they knew the calls were recorded and they didn't want that to be ever broadcast, that there was a problem with an abortion." She says Planned Parenthood, it was a money-grubbing, evil, very sad, sad place to work. Wow. She left Planned Parenthood with the help from Abby Johnson, a former Planned Parenthood director, who now runs an organization called And Then There Were None, a charity that devotes its time to helping abortion clinic workers flee the abortion industry. Well, we're thankful that there's someone like Abby Johnson out there. But, I mean, what do you expect when your daily business is the butchering and dismembering of innocent human beings? It's got to get to you after a while. Well, I mean, I would hope it would get to you if you got into that kind of dirty, filthy business, that eventually you would have a change of heart and you would see how horrible it all is. But see, that's the problem with legalized, regulated murder. It does become something that people can do on a daily basis as if they were manufacturing widgets. And that's why it cannot be regulated. It must be killed. And I don't mean any abortionist must be killed or anyone working at abortion clinic must be killed. I mean the practice of the legalized, mechanized, industrialized murder of innocent people must be killed. It must be stopped. It must be ended. Because it leads to a coarse and hard-hearted society that eventually will destroy itself and kill itself. These people who are killing these babies, eventually, if left to their own devices, they would eventually kill each other and themselves as well. And they would kill you and me too. You don't think so? Well, let's go over to London from the Suicide of Great Britain file, England's Liverpool pathway. This is from the Daily Mail over there. Up to 60,000 patients die on the Liverpool care pathway each year. If you're not familiar with the Liverpool care pathway, I wish I would have tagged it better, but you can go back in my archives. We've covered it. It's the death panels, basically, but much more advanced than anything Barry and Hillary had proposed, because in England they've been doing it for quite some time, socialized medicine. So they've created the Liverpool care pathway, which is a euphemism for killing patients as soon as possible. Well, a study says up to 60,000 die each year without giving their consent. Now, these figures were released in a study, and despite these revelations, the secretary of the National Health Service claims that the Liverpool pathway is, quote, a fantastic step forward. One or two mistakes should not be allowed to discredit the entire end-of-life system. Certainly not. 60,000 mistakes. Well, every innocent person you kill, Mr. Hunt, is, well, it's even more than a mistake. It's a crime and a sin for which you should be punished and shall be punished one day, should you not repent. But he says it's a fantastic step forward in medicine. But an anti-euthanasia group over there in Great Britain says the pathway is designed to finish people off double quick, and it's a lethal pathway. This review that was carried out was an official inquiry driven by a public outcry over a string of disturbing cases in which patients or their families were ignored. The pathway, the Liverpool pathway, involves withdrawal of life-saving treatment with the sick, sedated and usually denied nutrition and hydration. And once a patient is put on the Liverpool care pathway, death typically takes place within 29 hours. And according to the review, many patients were not consulted despite being conscious when the doctors decided upon their care. So apparently there are some issues with the policy and how it's being executed. The policy of murdering sick people apparently needs some tweaks, is how the reporters in the story come across. Well, just because they haven't done the right paperwork or made the right consultation or the right form wasn't signed or the patient wasn't consulted in the right way, perhaps we've murdered them in an irresponsible manner. And so, an estimated 130,000 patients in England are put on the Liverpool pathway each year. Health trusts, which are like HMOs over there, health trusts are thought to have been rewarded with an extra £30 million for putting more patients on the Liverpool care path. See, there's a financial incentive to killing the sick because it costs the HMO a lot of money, these sick people. And so if hospitals utilize the Liverpool care pathway, well, they're rewarded because they're saving money for the boss. And so there's actually an incentive. If you want to improve your career path, put more people on the Liverpool care path. Well, the care services administrator has suggested that concerns about the system were relatively minor compared with its benefits. They'll probably come out with a cost-benefit analysis that'll show, undeniably in black and white, that killing a sick patient is a lot cheaper than helping them get well or helping them die comfortably in their own good time. And nobody will be able to argue with that, and since it's all legal, well, we just need to make sure that it's properly executed. I generally don't do puns, but I meant executed. Yeah, executed properly. All right, so now let's move on to the Soviet file. Yes, the United States is practically the Soviet Union at this point. I've got a story from, see, I know that the abortion and the homo stuff, it gets so depressing after a while, that a story about the communist takeover of the free market is actually a breath of fresh air. That tells you how dark it is out. But I've got a story from CNN. President Barack Obama will announce next week two new private-public partnerships in Chicago and Detroit. They're gonna start up what they call innovation institutes, led by the Defense Department and supported by hundreds of millions of dollars, half from the federal government and half, supposedly, from private partners. And you ask, well, who are the private partners, one might ask. Yes, well, they are EWI, a manufacturing giant, and they have 60 other partners involved, and UI Labs, who are a technology manufacturing company, and they have 73 private partners partnering with the government in what Obama calls his year of action. Yes, he's promised to use his executive authority there to go around normal politics and just institute things. And this is Year of Action, and the program focuses on students, hoping to expose them to unique training opportunities, sex, drugs, and homosexuality. Oh, I added that last part. What's that? Yeah, these are college students. Oh, yeah, you're right. They already got that in grade school. So just unique training opportunities. That's all we need. So EWI and UI Labs partnering with the government, and the goal, here's what UI Labs said in their statement about the goal of the Innovation Institutes, the public-private partnership, more commonly known as cronyism. UI Labs says the goal is to create a novel partnership between world-leading manufacturing experts and cutting-edge software companies to enable interoperability across the supply chain, develop enhanced digital capabilities to design and test new products, and to reduce costs in manufacturing processes across multiple industries. Memo to Barry and the folks at EWI and UI Labs. Hello. The free market is always doing that every day. The last thing we need is a government program to be set up in order to improve manufacturing and productivity. We already do that as free human beings, and we don't need you butting in. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and those smooth sounds are courtesy of my extremely attractive audio engineer, who's been busy with a project and unable to. That's why I haven't been cracking a lot of jokes, because my extremely attractive audio engineer is hard to work on another project. Speaking of improving productivity, she's providing bumpers for the show while working on an extremely important project related to the homeschooling of the children involving candy, snacks. She's working very hard, yet still doing a good job. And she doesn't have any help from an empowerment zone or an innovation institute or anyone from the Obama administration. And there is no commissar on site here at the Worldview, which is probably why the show outrages so many liberals, leftists, and freaks, and deviants, and garden variety sodomites. Yeah, that's what I said. All right. I haven't used that one in a while, so I wanted to get that out there. All right. Oh, have I talked about Real Science Radio and their analysis of the Ken Ham Bill Nye debate? Did I already talk that up? Maybe I already did. Anyway, got to hear part three. I got to tell you. Real Science Radio, Fred Williams, Bob Inyard, they did a better job of enlightening the world about the nature of the evolution creation debate than Mr. Nye and Mr. Ham did. And not that Mr. Ham didn't do a fine job. He did a fine job. But, Bob, you got to get all... Yeah, I would go to the website there at kgov.com, and I would buy that three-show series from Real Science Radio. You should just subscribe to it. They're trying to have a telethon over there this month, and if you haven't given, please do so, because they could use your help. As probably the premier resource on the planet for creation science. I know I said that to Bob, and he was like, Doug, you can't say that. And I said, well, I can say whatever I want. I've been to Answers in Genesis, and I've been following the creation movement for 20 years. I've been a creationist since I'm 5 years old. And when it comes to quality of content and paying attention to the things that really stand the best chance of changing people's minds, about this idea that we evolved from nothing accidentally when nothing exploded a billion years ago. When confronting the atheists, the evolutionists, and the Big Bangers, there's certain evidence that I would consider the big guns. There's certain content that I believe can actually make someone stop and think. And I just happen to think that Real Science Radio does a better job of that than anyone, which to me makes them the premier resource for creation science material in the world today. All right, so there I said it. Now, on to some political news from the War File. Barry Ho has hired Robert Malley to do something. What has he been hired to do? Let's see. Well, I didn't mark this story up very well. It's almost the end of the show, and barely have my act together at this point. He's been hired to do so, to be a senior director at the White House's National Security Council. Yeah, Robert Malley is a Middle East scholar, whatever that means. And if you'll remember, if you think back, go in the Wayback Machine with me, he resigned from his advisory role in the Barry Ho campaign back in 2008 when it was revealed that he had met with the Palestinian terror group Hamas. So he had, back then, Barry was trying to win an election, and he couldn't have someone who had met openly with Hamas on his campaign, so they told him, you know, take it easy, Robert. I'll have more options after the election. You know, like he told Medvedev. Anyway, now that Barry does not have to win an election, he's putting Robert Malley, friend of Hamas, on the White House's National Security Council. Yes, that's right. Hamas, you'll remember back in 08, had claimed to have met secretly with senior advisors to the Obama campaign back in 08. And, of course, that scuttled Mr. Malley's position as a campaign advisor. But now, by the way, Malley also worked in the Clinton White House, as you can well imagine. And now he's been appointed, and the appointment does not require any Senate confirmation or anything. Barry can put whoever he wants on there. And so he's put friend of Hamas, Robert Malley, onto the National Security Council so that Hamas has yet another inside guy. That's just what we need. I really appreciate that, Barry. It'd be interesting to see what kind of stuff Barry pulls in the next few years. Since he has no election he needs to win, and his goal, I think, if you study what he's been doing lately, I think his goal is to preside over the global caliphate. I think that's his actual, you know, what could be above President of the United States? Well, Ummah of the caliphate, which maybe that's what Barry's going for. What'll be funny, though, is that the mullahs will cut his head off first. Yeah, that's why I say these liberals are actually suicidal. They're hell-bent on your destruction and the corruption of your children, but ultimately they're hell-bent on their own death and suicide. And so we need conservatives to stand against them, but what do we get? Well, we get John Boehner, Ted Nugent, and now Howard Stern. Yeah. What? Oh, well, hold on. I know. Howard Stern? Well, listen. Ted Nugent. Now, if you were like me back in the 70s and 80s, I was just a young child, but I remember listening to Mr. Nugent's music, and I remember him being billing himself and selling himself as an oversexed heterosexual. Don't get me wrong, because this is just good old-fashioned sin. But he had a lot of songs about sex and all that, right? What was he? Nobody in 1974 considered Ted Nugent to be a conservative. Parents were horrified that their children would be listening to Ted Nugent records singing about the Wango Tango and the Maserati and all of that. Don't you people remember anything? So Ted Nugent comes out and he says he's in favor of the Second Amendment. He doesn't like Barry Ho, so suddenly now he's a conservative. I mean, will you people get out of here with that? Anyways, you all heard the story this week. And CNN, listen to what CNN writes. Conservative activist and rocker Ted Nugent... Conservative? What are you people talking about? Anyway, he's been forced to apologize for using the term subhuman mongrel to describe President Barack Obama. And he came out and he says, I apologize and I'm sorry and I'm... Whatever. This guy's not a conservative, never was a conservative. He's a libertine, is all he is. And he doesn't like the communists taking his dough or telling him he can't go shoot. So that doesn't make him a conservative. He's a loudmouth sex pervert. That's what he always was. And so now he's embarrassed the Republicans, appropriately. They're getting what they deserve. But don't worry. Hot on the heels of Ted Nugent's rise to conservatism is now Howard Stern. That's right. Howard Stern said on his show he was mad about this idea that the Federal Communications Commission is opposed to his network merging, you know, satellite XM radio. Apparently they're going to merge with someone. And then he heard about this, the Democrats' idea to put a FCC commissar in the newsrooms, which I suppose he thinks there would be someone in his room. I don't know. He said on his radio show that, here's what he said. He says, I voted for Democrats, but I'll never vote for a Democrat again. I don't give a bleep, no matter who they are. I don't care if God becomes a Democrat. I backed Hillary Clinton, I backed Al Gore, I backed John Kerry, but I'm done with them. They're communists. So now he'll probably get a show on Fox News. They'll simulcast his pornographic, but now it's conservative, because he doesn't like Barry Obama and he's against the communists. Next election, he'll join Ted Nugent as a newly minted conservative activist, as the Republicans continue their long-established pattern of slowly but surely turning conservatism into liberalism. That's what they've been doing for my whole life. How else does Ted Nugent become a conservative? And who's that other crotch comic who hung out with Jimmy Kimmel? He's now a conservative because he went on a rant against Obama. I don't even remember his name. Anyway, these people are not conservatives. And just because you're for low taxes and the Second Amendment, that does not make you a conservative. Yeah. Ted Nugent's a cheap liberal. Yeah, he doesn't want to give the government his guns or his money. But when it comes to the moral degradation of the country, I just haven't heard anything from Ted that has impressed me. And what does it mean to be a conservative? Well, I think God is a conservative. And I say that from the very beginning, when God realized that things went badly because of poor choices that humans made, he's been on a mission to conserve godliness. And if you do not stand up for the living God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and his son Jesus Christ, the Savior and the Judge of all the earth, you're not a conservative. And don't even try to come in here with any of that. All right. Finally, John Boehner? Yeah, I know. John Boehner's in the news. He and his wife have bought a condo in Marco Island, Florida, where apparently he plans to retire. He bought the condo for a little over $835,000. They say he put down $185,000 in cash, which he happened to have as a congressman. I'm sure he was a very successful businessman, right? Before he got into Congress. I'm sure he was wealthy before. No, he... Somehow he ends up with $185,000 on hand to buy a condo. And the Breitbart reports, it's not rare for congressional leaders to buy vacation homes. Many members of Congress are wealthy. Funny, because many of them weren't really that wealthy before they got there. Although most of them were lawyers. And so anyway, John Boehner bought himself a condo. I don't have anything against the guy buying a condo. I hope to buy a condo in a nice warm place someday, but I don't plan on stealing the money to get it like John Boehner has done. Yeah, that's right. He's been a part of an organized shakedown for 20 years, John Boehner has, and he's pocketed plenty of money from it. And now he's bought himself a condo in Marco Island, Florida, and I think he should be sent there as soon as possible. You know, like that island they sent Napoleon to. We should send John Boehner to his own private Idaho on St. Marco Island and get him out of the government before he steals again. All right. So there you have it. That's the show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. And should the Lord tarry, I will return next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.